there's this idea that the great epiphanies and realizations in life occur in the mind and are intellectual. And there's this image of we have of somebody coming to an important, crucial breakthrough, as it's generally portrayed as somebody who's lost in thought, unaware, perhaps in the thinker pose, like this, the thinker pose. And it's often on movies and television shows when somebody's, you know, thinking the big questions, you know, they're portrayed as being unaware of what's going on around them, and they're, it's very much this heady experience. And the problem with intellectualization and ideas that are born entirely in thought is that they have no physical, felt, grounding experience. You can have the realization, holy shit, I'm going to die. Not maybe today or tomorrow, but just you might have a realization of your own mortality. And yet, when the next day comes around, you'll just go back to being stressed out about the small things in life and bent out of shape about what somebody says at work. Because it's simply an intellectualization. It's not something that's truly experienced. On the other hand, if we really experience the death of somebody that we're close with, well, that really throws us, and we really feel it somatically in the body. There's this real felt realization. It's experiential. It has a resonance. And that's really where true change happens. If we have the realization, oh, I'm an alcoholic, or I'm a workaholic, or I'm whatever, just the realization will not change anything. But when it's truly felt, a sense of deep sense of, oh my God, I'm wasting my life, or I'm causing myself suffering, when we really feel it, when it's felt in the body and it's experienced, then these realizations have actually the profound agency that they can change the way we behave. Something that's simply thought, that is put in simply in the temporal lobe, when we're under stress in life, and we're bombarding the frontal lobe with dopamine and cortisol and adrenaline, it's overwhelmed. If anybody's ever had a panic attack or a sudden fear or post-traumatic stress disorder or anything like that, the experience of an onrush of fear, you'll know all the intellectualization and the telling yourself, I'm okay right now, doesn't really work. But when we've over time developed a felt technique that calms us, like for instance working with the breath, for example, or body sensations, then when we're in the midst of panic and fear and worry and obsession and all that, the neurotransmitters and hormones that are being released, it's not just the temporal lobe that's actually calming the sympathetic nervous system. It's actually a part of the brain called the nucleus accumbens and the amygdala, which can be de-triggered, and we can actually release serotonin and actually create. But it has to be something that's felt and experienced. It can't be this intellectual idea. That will be useless. You know, I love reading Foucault and Derrida with like anybody else. But when it comes to stress and working with it, I've never found Jacques Derrida's wonderful ideas to be the least bit useful. They're wonderful to ponder, though, don't get me wrong. So the body is a refuge. The body is a... it's a place, an anchor, from which we not only experience things that give it, that give our realizations weight, but also when we're caught up in obsession, if we have body awareness, awareness of how, where there's tightness, where there's ease, how the breath feels, or what the sensations of shifting are, the there's an anchor to detach from thoughts which can be really sticky, like what's going to happen to me, what other people think about me, how will I pay the rent, how do I compare with other people. If we're just dealing with those thoughts head on in our heads, we're going to identify with our fear, and our fear is going to whisk us away. But if we have an anchor, like a boat has an anchor, if we have a foundation from which we can lower or keep, maintain part of our awareness, then the fear, the thoughts of, you know, what's going to happen to me, or what is, what are they saying about me at work, or whatever, we have a little bit of distance. We can detach from those thoughts, and we also have some perspective, a different perspective, because generally when we're thinking thoughts of fear, we're unaware of the way fear is affecting us. We simply go along with it in the idea that, well, if I follow my fear or my obsession, my worry, my planning, maybe I can figure out what's going to happen in the future and I can prepare myself. But we don't notice the amount of physical stress that is the result of fear, how it affects us, how it affects the breath, how it affects the stomach, how it, what feelings arise in the chest and the strangling maybe in the throat, or maybe there's a the shoulders go up, or maybe the brow contracts, or maybe the jaw locks, or maybe the jaw starts working, or maybe we start grinding our teeth, or maybe we start clenching our fists or whatever. But there's a physical result of worry and of planning and of getting lost in fantasies. When we go up into the head, the body feels pretty abandoned and it goes into this very armored defensive mode. And so when we see really how thoughts affect us physically, we get a different perspective on them. The thought, "May all beings in this room be happy," does not give rise to any tension in my body. If I think the thought, "May you be happy," not a single muscle in my body contracts with, "Eh, fuck them." It's just, or if, especially if I start with, "May I be peaceful," there's no real, but the moment I start thinking, "Oh, I wonder what's, you know, I wonder how I'm going to be making money next month," or whatever, immediately there's this, I can just feel my shoulders start to, and there's like a slight tension in my stomach. And that's a new perspective. So when the body feels comfortable, we give the mind a place to reside that's often so much safer than when we're just up here entirely in our head. I like the metaphor I once heard Ajahn Susitato of lowering the mind into the body like we're lowering a baby into a mother's arms where it's safe. We start by, in meditation, we start by melting the tension, relaxing the sensation, and then creating a space where the mind will feel comfortable beginning to spread into and become fully aware, because there's a lot of wisdom that goes on when we truly lower or at least expand our awareness and become cognizant of the somatic bodily experiences that are going on. What kind of wisdom? I broke it down into a few. I was sort of thinking about my experience working with the body, and I broke it down into a few areas where the body, we generally don't think of the body as being intelligent. And we think of the mind as being intelligent. Body maybe is strong or whatever, but the body actually has a lot of intelligence. The first is that the body knows balance. You really can't think yourself into balance. Maybe you can. Maybe you could say, all right, right now I should tilt a little to the right. Uh-oh, tilt a little left. Nope, back to the right. Oops, I'm tilting a little forward. Oop, a little back, gotta tilt back. If you're doing that all the fucking time, my God, what a bore life would be. So the body is taking care of balance for us. We don't have to think about it to stay upright. And there's an enormous amount of wisdom there, because actually when we really appreciate balance by going into the body and just feeling it, maybe when we're doing a standing meditation, or you stop putting so much effort into holding yourself up and just feel balance happening when we're meditating, we realize that so much of our lives, we're leaning forward mentally in life. We're living outside of the body in the world in front of us. We're paying attention to what people are doing and what's going on that Facebook. Yes, you know, the Facebook. There's like, what's she saying right now? I don't like what she's... Oh, maybe... All right, I don't mind what she said. But what's he saying and what's going on? And there's this sense of flooding out into the computer monitor or out into the world. And we feel almost as if the body is somewhat below and behind us. It's not. We are in the body, but the awareness, our awareness is so often flooding out into the world, pouring out through the senses, literally with the eyes, you know, what the Buddha called tamayata, just grabbing onto the world and pulling it and trying to make sense of it all and trying to, you know, control things. And all of that is a lack of balance. When we're truly in balance, you'll notice when you've got your eyes closed, when we're truly in balance, we're not in front of the body, we're not behind the body, we're not to the left, we're not to the right. We're really, you know, it's right here, all the way down. It's in the spine to the crown of the head. And you find when you have body awareness, if you ever try listening to, you know, a talk or with your eyes closed and you keep the awareness not looking, but if you try this now, if you close your eyes and you find the center in your body, you're still going to hear everything I say. It's not like we have to pour outwards into the world to be aware of what's going on. We can have this centeredness and still participate and understand what's going on and be aware. It's not like we have to constantly go out and grab information and pull it back in. It comes in. But we train ourselves to completely abandon body awareness and to go out. And this is a little, obviously this stuff is a little difficult to talk about, so work with me. I'm doing the best I can. But there's this sense of flooding out, which is known as the asavas, the Buddha called it, flooding out and trying to like grab onto things that we think will bring us security. And so when we're really balanced, we're not forward, back, left or right. And not only is that the case, but when we're truly balanced, we notice balance doesn't happen up in the head. It happens in the abdomen. You know, it's lower down in the body. It's not only right, left, forward, or back. It's also being balanced in terms of height. I don't know anything about martial arts, but I do notice that when people are doing martial arts, they're really truly balanced. Their weight is lower. Their awareness of their body has lowered down, and they're in a position where they can really lower into and feel the entirety of the body. And that's a process of being, allowing the awareness to go down and to really feel comfortable in what's going on beneath our heads. Most of the time we live up here, right? We almost have this feeling that awareness is entirely right behind the eyes and between the ears, because that's where we're so devoted to sight and sound. So we're living like we're right here in the head. And we're so devaluing the physical sense of being alive, the embodied sense, the breath, the entirety of the tactility of, I don't even know if that's a word, tactility, but it sounds nice. It's a nice sounding word. So anyway, so it's very much, we really begin to appreciate when we become embodied or aware of the body, just that how we can give ourselves permission not to flood outside of ourselves and lose awareness and live up here and out there, but we can actually lower down and feel comfortable and give ourselves so much more of an anchor, so that we're not just trapped by what people are saying and doing. We can have a safe place where you can do whatever you want to do, and I don't have to react, because I'm not flooding out there. I'm not living up here thinking about what you're doing. I'm actually partially down here. And that gives me a lot more permission not to react, not to get caught up in the dramas of life. Another thing that the body has when we meditate and we become aware of it is it's got peripheral awareness. We often think like, oh, if I close my eyes and I become aware of the body, I'm not going to know what's around me. I'm going to be vulnerable. Somebody could come and steal my wallet. Never occurred to me. Maybe I should. Okay, close your eyes. But there actually is this peripheral awareness. And, you know, there's this other thing that we worry about, perhaps at the beginning of meditation, like, well, am I going to look like a fucking idiot? You know, how do I look? Am I drooling? You know, am I bending forward? And actually, over time, there's this awareness that the body really is very much aware of itself and aware of what's going on around us more than we give it credit for. We need to be much less vigilant about what's going on around us than we think. Because when we really just go into the body, we still are aware of when people are walking around us, or if there's anything noteworthy happens. I guarantee you, you'll find over the course of your meditating lives that you're aware of everything. The Buddha called it the realm of perception or neither perception or non-perception, which means we're aware of the world, but we're not fixating on it. So this is very much, as we go into the body, we begin to realize there's this sense of not only what's going on, but also we're much more aware of the energy that we're putting out. So often in life, we're like, to use an analogy of one of my favorite teachers, Ajahn Jeff, talks about the person who barges into a gathering of people, and they barge in and they bring all this energy, and they sit down and they look around and they go, "What's up?" And everybody's like, "Ugh!" And then, you know, they're all shocked, and then the person eventually leaves and goes and finds somebody else and says, "You know, that group of people, they really fucked up. I just went and asked them what's up, and they all gave me this crazy look." Because so many times in life we're unaware of the energy, the physical energy, what we're bringing into the world. You know, we're so caught up in what other people are doing that we're totally unaware. That thing I was talking about where
You know, we see somebody, they don't smile or wave at us, and we go, ah, that bastard didn't smile or wave at me. We're totally unaware that we didn't smile or wave at them, because we're so out there. So this peripheral awareness and body awareness still goes on. There's so much more self-awareness that occurs that's useful when we are aware of what's going on. And the third thing that we become really profoundly, we see the wisdom in the body, is the breath. Or if you want, other body sensations. But what we become aware of is that the body is doing all this shit to keep us alive. You know? When we fall asleep at night, the body isn't just going, okay, fuck it, I'm going to die now. You know, it continues the digestion, it continues the breathing. It's really looking after us. But the mind has a story. I got to stay on guard. I got to look, I got to know what's going on in the world, or, you know, I'm fucked. I'm really fucked. I got to keep this, you know, I got to stay on top of it. There's shit going on, I gotta stay on top of it. What's going on CNN? I gotta know, I gotta stay on top of it. This is really important. And we tend to forget that the real important things, like the little thing called the breath that gave us life, and like the digestion, and like the like I know what the fuck I'm talking about. Whenever I get into a situation where I want to talk about lymph nodes and stuff, I realize I know nothing about it. But there's stuff going on. And when we really become aware through meditation, there's this, oh, you know what? I can let go a little bit. I don't need to be as worked up about whatever is working me up, because actually the stuff that's really keeping me alive and going is already taken care of. You know, really what I've got to do is I've just got to make sure I get enough food and sleep to eat this. And, you know, I mean, pretty much, I'm taken care of. But we have all the stories about everything we need to do, and I got to go there, and I got to do this, blah, 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 blah. So, these are some of the things that the body knows. It knows balance, it knows peripheral awareness, it knows breathing and how to keep us alive. And from this, I'll just summarize, to bring this to a close, some of the sort of profound realizations that come about because of what the Buddha called kaya gata sati, or body awareness, or not flooding out into the world and maintaining. The first is that our sense of time changes when we become aware, when we lower the awareness into the body, or we become more attuned to what the body is telling us. We tend to live in this idea that, and this is going to sound pretty abstract, but that time is like slices of bread, and that we're right now in one slice of bread, like, okay, I'm in the 7 to 8, which is the Dharmapunks, and then from, and then at my 9 to 10, I've got this, and then tomorrow from 10 to 11, I got that, and then I've got from 1 to 2, I've got this thing I've got to do. So we live like life has this sort of sliced bread, like time is broken up into these little chunks. And when we're actually truly in the body and we become aware of the rhythms of the body, not only the breath, but just the rhythms of how the body changes, the energy levels it has, the amount of energy levels in the mind, we less live in the sense of time as this little sort of split up thing, and the present and the rhythms of the body, the time of the body has much more importance. Sounds pretty abstract, but go with me with it. We less live in this sense of this internal calendar and this internal to-do list, and the present and just the awareness of the body's flows and ebbs, and the sense of just being, it becomes much more important. And suddenly, for me, the more I meditate, the more freedom and space and time I have in life.
you know, there's a story we tell ourselves, oh, I don't have enough time to meditate. Actually, you find that when we take the time, whether your practice is just 15 minutes or 45, when we take time to really go into the body, really relax and let go of that calendar and that to-do list and all that planning, the sense of having more time really expands. We feel we have less time the more we're living up in our heads and carrying around that to-do list of all the shit we've got to get done. But when we give ourselves permission to put that aside and really become in touch with stuff that's truly happening right now, that sense of being squeezed into little hour chunks of life begins to fade, and we begin to feel less cramped in life. It's also, not only is it a temporal thing, it's a spatial thing. When we really fully inhabit, you know, the space we're taking up, when we're truly planted, we are less feeling like we're hemmed in by the world. There's much more of a sense of space if I'm truly embodied than if my awareness is just right here behind my eyes and between my ears. That's a real tucked in, claustrophobic experience. And very often when we're unaware of the body takes on this sort of weighty, dark presence beneath our awareness, where we're aware there's something. Yeah, I know there's something beneath my eyes. I haven't touched base with it recently, and it feels sort of tense, so I don't really want to pay attention to it. And awareness becomes very small then. So when we truly make the body comfortable and expand our awareness into it, we feel less hemmed in. It's amazing how we can suddenly feel much more expansive, and awareness and consciousness can feel much less impinged. That's another word that Ajahn Vayama likes to use, impinged upon. Because we're truly actually fully owning the space that we occupy. We're not just here in the head, we're truly in the body. And that finally brings up, I think, the most wonderful point, that when we relax the body and we feel feelings, we find that there's so much more ability of the body to carry our suffering and our sadness and our and the things that we don't like to look at than we ever imagined. We don't often like in life to look at the things that have caused us a lot of pain. We don't like to really be with it because we have this feeling that it will take us over, or that we might be driven insane by it, or that we might not be able to get rid of it. Or, you know, if I really allow myself to feel sadness over this death or a breakup or whatever, that'll somehow consume us. So we tend to want to think it but not feel it. And actually, when the body is truly a relaxed, peaceful vessel, it can contain and hold anything that we feel. It can really hold any experience, any sadness, any grief. We don't have to be afraid that it will consume us anymore, because we find that as we go through life and we're really experiencing how loss or rejection or getting fired or whatever, how it really feels, we find that actually the body can hold on to it and can let us process it, and that's the way we can move on. All the thinking about loss and grief and, you know, rejections and breakups and disappointments don't really get rid of anything. All we're doing is we're stuffing, as they say, stuff down. But the moment we really feel what's going on and really give it its attention, we find that the body is enough.
And then there's this incredible sense of lightness that happens when we really feel stuff, because it's not this illusion that we can stuff stuff down and not be aware of it is of course not true. It's always giving this weighty feeling to the mind when we're not acknowledging something. So I think that's really a good amount of overview of the value of being aware of the body. Just in summary, the more embodied presence we have, the more distance we can get from thoughts, the more perspective we can get on how thoughts and fears affect us, we can really get in touch with how much awareness we have without needing to constantly be vigilant and overworked up about what's going on in the world. And we can really begin to find so much more space and freedom than we previously thought we had. So I thank you for listening. I hope that there was something of value in there. And now it's your turn to ask any questions or comments that you'd like. And I'm going to turn this off.